slowly, still not looking up from the jar of Nutella which he was slowly filling with water. Aaron got up and walked away. "What a dick," I commented. "He's just tired." "Here we go, dude." He closed the lid on the jar and shook it furiously. "Best idea ever." He unscrewed the cap and handed it to me. "First dibs?" I was expecting it to taste watered down, but instead I was surprised. "Wow, that's actually really good. A lot better than I expected it to be." "When are you going to learn that there is no way to make Nutella not taste good?" We walked back to the train station and sat on a bench next to Aaron, who now had his headphones in and was staring straight ahead. I wondered how much longer this was going to go on, us not getting along. I tried to think of possible solutions while we sat and waited for the train. "This is stupid," I thought. "We're never going to be able to carry on like this." The money situation was driving us apart, and I knew if we spent another month there, we'd be doomed to kill each other. After 10 or 15 minutes, an idea suddenly struck me. I tapped Aaron on the shoulder. "Why don't we just leave Europe early?" I asked. "What, like, go ahead and fly to Thailand?" "Yeah, I mean, we aren't really seeing much here anyway. Instead of staying in Europe another month, we could fly to Thailand early and actually be able to afford shit." Thailand has a much cheaper cost of living than Europe. A night in a hostel could cost as little as $1 US per night, compared to Western Europe's bare minimum of $12 on a good day. We could live comfortably in Southeast Asia.
"I mean, that's actually not a bad idea," Aaron agreed. "What do you think, Corey?"
Corey spoke plainly. "If that means I can eat a real fucking meal and sleep in a real fucking bed, then I don't give a shit what we do." "And the travel agency said we could change our flights, right?" Aaron asked. This had been one of the major reasons I had booked with the agency we picked. They told me I could change flights whenever I wanted, paying only a small fee. We had booked all our flights in advance, from New York to Barcelona, from Rome to Bangkok, and then from Perth to Auckland and finally on to Los Angeles. We planned on taking boats from Thailand to Australia.
"That's what they said," I answered.
"Okay.
I think it's a good idea. But you don't care if you don't get to see much of Italy then?"
"Look at what we're doing, man. I haven't even been able to see a tiny percentage of the shit I'd wanted to see in Europe. Money is ruining this trip as far as I'm concerned. I plan on coming back here anyway, so I don't really care. All I ask is that I get to have at least one Italian meal in a decent restaurant."
"Well, I say we try to find some Wi-Fi tomorrow and shoot him an email. Maybe book the flight for next week."
That was it. I instantly felt relieved. Once we made it to Thailand, we would be able to afford to enjoy our trip without guilt. Donations had been rolling in from the website. Around $300 had been given to us by our friends and family members back home who wanted to help out. I was confident they would keep trickling in and that I would make some decent money if I could have Wi-Fi for a reliable amount of time. But I had given up trying to convince Aaron of this. After numerous arguments, he'd made it apparent that he didn't believe we'd ever see money from my computer work. It was a frustrating irony. We were living so poorly because he wouldn't let me make money to live comfortably. I never had Wi-Fi to do computer work, and I was always too tired from sleeping in random places with barely enough food to get by that I rarely felt like playing music on the street for money. But none of that would matter now. In Thailand, we could afford to stay in a hostel every night. We could get a meal in a decent restaurant for $1 or $2. Things were looking up. My spirits immediately lifted just on the mere notion that we were escaping our homeless lifestyle soon. I wrote in my journal as we waited for the train to arrive and take us someplace we could try and sleep. It was around 1 p.m. at that point, and I was a total zombie. In my journal, I wrote, "I'm very much done with sleeping in strange, dangerous places and surviving on little sustenance. But I will do what must be done. Thailand can't come soon enough." End of chapter 14. Chapter 15. D, the Friendly Neighborhood Emu. Deiva Marina, Italy. July 28th. Deiva Marina turned out to be just the same as the rest of the coastline I'd seen through the window of the train, devoid of suitable vegetation for campsites. We'd walked through the city and to the outskirts on the other side and spotted a bridge with a dried-up creek bed underneath it. We all agreed that it was more than suitable to get some rest under. It was a bitch to actually get under, though, as there were tall weeds on both sides which required walking through while avoiding random large rocks beneath our feet. Once under the bridge, it wasn't that bad, though. It was a pretty large, open area. The rocks in the creek bed weren't very big alongside of the huge concrete supporting walls on either end, so we picked the one that hid us from view from the walkway above and laid our gear there. We took a long nap that afternoon and woke up in the early evening. I was the first one awake and sat quietly writing in my journal. Aaron and I were just not getting along, and getting my frustrations out on paper seemed to help my mood. It was a way for me to vent without actually having to vent to, or more likely at, someone. I was just fed up with his attitude on money and living, just all of it. Corey was getting sick of it as well, but he was a lot better at keeping it to himself than I was. I decided that it wasn't worth the worry. Getting to Thailand earlier would help, but I needed to make a real effort to get along with Aaron if I wanted this trip to improve. I nudged him awake. "Hey man, it's like 6 in the afternoon, we should probably get up." He rubbed his eyes and sat up. I continued, "I think we should talk, man. Listen, I know I've been kind of a Holy shit, dude. What? There's a gigantic bird behind you right now. Huh?" Aaron turned around and saw the massive, ostrich-like bird standing a few feet away from him under the bridge with us. "What the hell is that?" I asked. The bird stood there and looked at us. It made a weird shuffling noise and casually walked a few feet further. Corey, wake up and look at this shit." "Huh?" He yawned and sat up rather quickly. "Holy shit, that's a big-ass bird. What the hell is that thing? An ostrich?" "No, I think it's an emu," Aaron said calmly as he turned on his camera to take some pictures. "Pretty sure they're native to Australia." "Well, what the fuck is it doing under this bridge then?" Corey chuckled. "That's a great question that I don't think any of us will have the answer to." Just then we heard voices above us on the bridge, followed by a loud thump a few yards away. A potato. Someone had just thrown a potato off the bridge above us. Thump. Another one. Thump, thump, thump. They apparently emptied the whole sack into the creek bed. "This thing must be like the town mascot or something," Corey laughed. "Wonder what kind of dipshit thinks a bird is going to eat a potato, though." Aaron walked over to the potatoes, which had landed amidst a small pile of other food items people had, quote, donated to the emu. "This is a perfectly good orange." He held up a navel orange from somewhere in the pile and peeled the skin off. He took a bite and then held it out towards us. "You want some?" "Aaron," Corey started to say as he lifted his head to his brow in humorous befuddlement, "you're telling me that you won't eat Nutella or peanut butter out of a jar after Tom and I have dipped our spoons in it because you're afraid of germs, but you'll eat a fucking skank nasty orange that someone threw off a goddamn bridge?"
"Yeah, but that's different."
"I'm not even going to attempt to address just how outlandish that is, Aaron."
"The potatoes look good too."
"You're fucking ridiculous, dude." I laughed, baffled and in agreement with Corey's comment. "But, yeah, grab a couple of those potatoes, because we're cooking those bitches up tonight." Amidst the very real argument that, yes, totally started because of the absurd conversation you just heard, I told Aaron that I was going to try my best not to get into it with him anymore. This, as I explained it, would basically consist of me just keeping my opinions on the things he was dragging us into to myself for the most part. He decided that was as good a time as any to air another grievance with Corey and me, going on to tell us that He'd prefer it if we didn't say the word goddamn around him. We hadn't known before the trip that he was religious, but had found out somewhere along the way earlier, when he mentioned his Catholic upbringing. We had surmised by now, even before this conversation, that it was pretty important to him. He'd gone to Catholic school almost his whole life, and his parents were devout. Now, I don't have any problems with anyone believing whatever they want to believe, but I'm not a huge fan of having it intrude on my life or the lives of other uninvolved parties. For example, telling people who they can love or who God wants them to kill. Or, less hyperbolically and more relevant, telling a couple of grown-ass men the swear words they can and can't use. But, although Aaron had quite immediately taken the inch I'd given him and asked for a mile, I figured I'd humor him simply for the sake of keeping the peace. Sure, I said. Whatever. I'll try. Corey wasn't so quick to agree to it. He told him as kindly as possible that, no offense, but he wasn't going to alter his lifestyle based on someone else's beliefs. Aaron shrugged it off with muttering under his breath, and that was that. We still hadn't gotten any proper food, so I volunteered to sit at the camp with our stuff while Corey and Aaron checked out the town and grabbed some groceries. I also gave them my phone so they could try to find Wi-Fi and shoot an email to our travel agent about changing the date of our flight to Southeast Asia. That night we cooked up the first good meal we'd had since the hot girl had bought us food at the rest stop restaurant in Switzerland. Aaron and Corey had picked up some pork from the store and we cooked it up with, you guessed it, the potatoes we'd found under the bridge, as well as a can of corn from the store. While we cooked, we came up with a name for our new roommate living just on the other side of the concrete barrier. Aaron told us that the emu was a female, so we named it Dee, after a character from the popular TV show It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. The character on the show is constantly referred to as having bird-like features and is even jokingly portrayed in one episode as an ostrich, so it seemed to fit. We stuffed ourselves with pork and potatoes and then settled back down to sleep. The plan was to wake up early, check my email to see if our travel agent had messaged us back, and then hop on the rails again and head for Rome. Aside from the fact that I was lying on a pile of rocks under a bridge, I actually slept pretty well that night. The next morning, however, was an entirely different story. I woke up around 5:30 a.m. or so. A soft morning light was starting to filter into the valley in which our little town was located. The dew was gently evaporating back into the atmosphere. But despite all outward appearances, all was most certainly not well under the bridge. My stomach was feeling very queasy, almost like it was filled with foam, bubbling away or angry little butterflies fluttering around crazily. I drank some water and then lay back down, but I still felt awful. I finally worked up the energy to reach for my pack and dig out some antacid tablets. I crunched down on three or four of them and then rested my head on my pillow again. I was feeling tired and I just wanted nothing more than to go back to sleep. But man, my stomach was feeling weird. I tried sitting up, leaning my pack against the concrete wall and then lying back against it with my small travel pillow against my neck. I finally fell back asleep this way. And then about 10 minutes later, I woke up again. I retched. My body kicked forward with a yak sound erupting involuntarily from my mouth as I gagged. I unzipped my sleeping bag as quickly as I could manage and ran over to the other side of the bridge. I started blowing chunks everywhere. I stood on a concrete platform and held onto the bridge support as I continued to puke my guts out. It was quite the roller coaster ride. The only other time in my life I can remember puking like this was the first time I ever tried hallucinogenic mushrooms. I had had a bad experience, as some would say, and attempted to relieve my delirium by emitting liquid fire from my mouth like a dragon. I was on all fours and arched my back downwards as vomit projected from me to an unbelievably far distance, in what my cousin later claimed looked just like that scene from The Exorcist. And then I rambled on and on about the childhood television show Dinosaurs before falling asleep on the grass. This was pretty close to that. I thought I was losing internal organs in this mess. I leaned hard against the wall in one final heave, and then I collapsed onto the ledge in exhaustion. I lay there for a moment, breathing heavily. Eventually, I pulled myself back up and stumbled back to my sleeping bag. Somehow, neither Corey or Aaron had been woken up by the battle I'd just fought with the infernal demons possessing my body on the other side of the bridge. I slid back into my sleeping bag and closed my eyes. I woke up an hour or so later and repeated the whole process, complete with falling onto the ground. My whole body shook and ached as I made my way back to the sleeping area. This time, both my companions woke up. "You all right, man?" Aaron asked. "No, dude, I'm sick as fuck. I'm pretty sure I have a fever." Corey grabbed the thermometer from our medical kit and took my temperature. 101.5. "Shit, man." I laid the thermometer back down. That was the second time I've ralphed this morning. I lay back down and fell asleep for a couple more hours. This time I woke up to the sound of thunder. It was going to storm. At least we're undercover from the bridge, I thought. A few seconds later, it started to rain, the wind blowing it right under the bridge and onto me. You've got to be kidding me. It was like something out of a movie, where one character says, "Well, at least it can't get any worse." I was so exhausted from my sudden illness that I couldn't even move myself farther under the bridge. I simply pulled the sleeping bag over my whole head and rolled onto my side. Then I fell back asleep. I woke up an hour or so later to see the sun shining again. I leaned forward to grab one of the water bottles. "You feel any better, man?" Corey asked as I was taking a sip from the old, worn-out plastic bottle we'd reused 100 times. "No." "You want to try and eat some food?" Aaron asked. "No." I lay back down just long enough to feel my stomach twist again. The good news was that I didn't feel like I was going to puke again. The bad news is that it was going to come out the other end. The really bad news is that I'd need to walk clear down the creek bed about 50 yards to an enclosure of bushes to be able to relieve myself. Puking on the other end of the bridge was one thing, but I think this operation would leave certain smells a little too close for comfort, if you get what I'm saying. I slipped out of my sleeping bag quickly. This wasn't going to be a sit-with-the-newspaper type of shit. This was going to be a napalm drop. "Toilet paper," I yelled hurriedly. "There's only like 2 wipes worth," Corey said as he handed me a pathetically insufficient amount of teepee. There was no time. "Sorry," I said as I grabbed a pair of his socks sitting on the ledge. I started sprinting, or more accurately, waddling like a runaway penguin through the creek bed. I didn't even check to see if there was anyone watching me from the walkway that followed most of the creek as I ran along with my hand on my ass. Halfway there, my waddle turned into a desperate Forrest Gump before the leg braces came off style of run. I reached a small creek and jumped over it. It was arguably the worst decision I've ever made. As the muscles in my legs sprang to life, the muscles in my asshole relaxed for one unfortunate moment. I did an airdrop onto the water about halfway over as a turd slipped out of my shorts leg. Plop. There was no slowing down now, and I hurried the rest of the way to the bushes. I quickly took off my shorts and underwear completely and threw them a few feet away for safety. And then World War III happened out of my ass. I've never experienced anything so terrifyingly awful in my life. I thought I was actually going to poop out my skeleton. It was everywhere on the grass. It looked like someone had tossed dynamite into a septic tank under me. I finally took a deep breath and walked over to the small creek where I proceeded to wash my feet and legs. I walked back over to grab my shorts, but apparently I wasn't done yet. I ran back over and repeated the whole process again, this time at least avoiding hitting myself with the shrapnel. I looked down at the toilet paper Corey had handed me and winced. It was gone in no time, as well as the socks I'd stolen from Corey moments earlier. By the time I was done, my underwear lay on top of the pile as well. After I'd finally finished the whole disgusting process, I walked back over to my shorts. If you haven't fully grasped the image, I had been completely naked during this entire process. Still no word on whether anyone was watching from the walkway above. Just imagine walking through your local park and seeing some naked hippie screaming and spraying shit out of his asshole all over your nice community creek bed. Oh God, am I deeply sorry to the unfortunate soul who inevitably discovered the residual carnage from that scene. I slowly walked back to the bridge and then crawled back into my sleeping bag where I rested my head on my pillow. Despite the midday heat, my body shivered inside the bag.
"We, still gonna try to keep moving south today?" Aaron asked.
I turned my head and stared at him with the fury of 1,000 murderous warriors. My eyes cut into his soul like a barbed spear into flesh. He nodded.
"Gotcha, I was just wondering."
I rolled back over and closed my eyes. An hour or so later, I finally spoke up with the raspy voice. "Aaron, I can't do this, man. I'm sick as fuck under a damn bridge. Can we please just get a hotel for one night?" He looked down at the ground, and I knew what was coming.
"I mean, what do you think that'll accomplish?"
"I just want a bed, man, or a toilet. I'm fucking miserable."
"Well, I don't think you're going to get over it any quicker because of those things. I saw a sign up there for a hotel, and it was like $40.
$40 fucking, Aaron. I would kill you right now for 5. Corey spoke up to defend me.
"I get what he's saying, man. I mean, look at the motherfucker. One night isn't going to make us go broke."
"We're not spending $40 on a damn hotel," Aaron said sternly. "You'll be all right. Just drink more water and try to get some sleep."
I couldn't believe it. I wanted to kill him. I didn't have the energy to fight with him, though, so there wasn't much I could do. I decided at that moment that if things didn't improve by the time we got to Thailand, I was going my own way. Corey could come with me if he wanted, but I wasn't going to travel with Aaron like this if he was going to keep being such a crazy person about money. I'd rather go broke and have a great time than spend the next year or so like this. I thought it was incredibly insensitive of him to let me suffer like that, laid out on the fucking gravel in agony, all to save $40 freaking. Early in the afternoon, Corey started to experience the same symptoms of illness that I was going through. Luckily for him, he didn't have it nearly as bad. He never threw up, just felt terrible and had the runs. Aaron decided to walk farther down the creek bed to the beach and check it out while Corey and I lay there in our sleeping bags. You know, instead of offering to help out by getting some tea or fruit or anything, really. He said he was bored. He expressed not even the slightest amount of empathy for our plight and offered little to no assistance to us. On the contrary, it felt almost as if it was a pain in his ass that we'd gotten sick. He returned a couple of hours later with an armful of stuff.
"What the hell is all that?" I asked.
Corey turned over in his sleeping bag and had a look as well. Aaron sat everything down in front of him.
"I found this place where some homeless guy stashed all his shit. Check it out, I got like an umbrella and a sleeping bag and this little laptop bag we can put all our food in."
"You stole from a homeless guy?" Corey asked.
I was perplexed. This was the same guy who had told us a day prior that he didn't want us to say goddamn because it offended his morally righteous belief system.
"It isn't really stealing. I mean, he obviously got it from somewhere. I'm sure he didn't buy it," he defended himself.
"He probably dug that stuff out of the trash, man," I interjected. "The stuff looked like it belonged in the trash. It was dirty and disgusting."
"You absolutely stole it, man," Corey commented again.
"You don't want me to say a special word that offends you, but it's okay for you to steal from a fucking homeless person?"
Aaron stuck by his defense and justified his actions to himself, but it never sat right with Corey or me. Considering all the bad luck we'd had so far, we didn't need the kind of bad karma that comes from stealing 3 things from a person who probably has, like, I don't know, 8 things total to his name. Plus, I didn't even want to be within 15 feet of that disgusting sleeping bag. The thing looked like an archaeological relic that had been eaten and subsequently shat out by a dinosaur. Well, enjoy the lice and scabies was all I could say to him. I finally started feeling a little better later in the evening, sometime after dark. I ate some rice, the first thing I'd eaten all day, and played a game of chess with Corey, whose condition was also improving. I was just lighting up a cigarette when I heard voices farther down the creek bed. Shh. I held up my hand to Corey as he was moving a piece. I think there's someone down here. We all sat quietly while we listened to the voices coming closer towards us. Three young guys, each with a beer in his hand, stepped out from the bushes, talking amongst each other. They were there for a few seconds before one of them happened to notice us and stopped talking mid-sentence. I spoke first. Hello. Welcome to Vagabond Bridge. Hey, one of the guys answered. Then he kind of laughed uncomfortably. What are you guys doing down here? We're living here at the moment. We're traveling to Rome. Oh, that's cool. You guys smoke weed? Yes, we most certainly do, Corey answered. Right on. Well, we came down here to smoke a pipe if you'd like to join. We sat and talked to them for the better part of an hour. They were from London, staying in a relative's house for the summer. They seemed like spoiled rich kids, but they were cool for the most part. At one point, one of the guys walked over to the other side of the bridge to take a leak. Holy shit! He jumped backwards. There's a big bird over here. We had completely forgotten to tell him. Oh yeah, that's D. What the fuck? She keeps to herself over there, you're fine. After a while, the guys headed on their way, back up the creek bed from whence they had come, and we settled down to try to get some sleep. We were planning on leaving the next day to continue south. Aaron and Corey had made the daily trip to fetch water earlier in the day and received a promising message from our travel agency that they'd be sending the price of the fee to change our flight, so we'd be checking the email and then heading on our way. As we were lying down to sleep, we heard a loud noise just up the creek bed from us. It sounded like some kind of animal coming towards us. What the hell is that? Corey asked quietly. It ran closer. It's a fucking boar, Aaron loudly realized. He threw a rock at the wild pig and it ran back up the creek. A few minutes later, there were two of them coming toward us. They were trying to get the food people had thrown off the bridge, we guessed. Damn it, Aaron yelled. Get the hell out of here. He threw another rock. A few minutes later, they were creeping closer again. This time we heard a rustling noise on the other side of the wall. Suddenly, Dee came running out towards the boars, her useless little wings spread as widely as they would go. The boars took off running in the other direction, squealing the whole way. We heard them splashing through the creek farther down this time as they fled the scene entirely. Damn, Dee's a badass, Corey laughed. That's my girl. Tell those motherfuckers who runs this bitch. We didn't see them the rest of the night. The next morning, Aaron and I walked up to the town to get water and check my email to see if we'd had a response from the travel agency. I jumped on a Wi-Fi connection as I stood outside of a little restaurant and pulled up my email. I read through and was immediately furious. They're saying we can't switch the flight, I told Aaron. What? Yeah, I mean we can, but they want like $600 a fucking person. How is that? I guess we have to pay the difference between flights on top of the fees and everything. So, basically the girl that sold us the tickets lied to us. That's what it's sounding like to me, I said. I need to get my computer up here so I can chat with them. It looked like we weren't leaving the bridge for at least another night. We walked back down and gathered up our gear. Corey wanted to come with us so he could chat with his girlfriend, so we went ahead and packed up everything and brought it with us so we wouldn't have to worry about theft. I was desperately hoping to talk the agency into switching that flight. The other, possibly larger issue that hadn't been talked about much was the 3-day layover we had scheduled for Cairo, Egypt. You may remember in the summer of 2013 that there was a revolution or uprising going on in Egypt. We had bought these tickets before the situation had escalated somewhat. It was now to the point that the United States had advised citizens not to even travel there. We had brushed it off at first, figuring it was probably blown out of proportion by the U.S. media, until we'd talked to Damo the Australian at In-Out Hostel, who'd just come from Egypt. Don't fucking go there, mate. I was lucky to escape with my life last week. Damo was a big guy. If he was scared, that was saying something. However, I had opted to go there anyway and just stay in the hostel the whole time except for one day when we would go on a tour to the pyramids. I didn't see how we could get caught up in anything dangerous if we just stuck with the other tourists. Corey was on par with me somewhat, but Aaron was adamantly opposed to anything of the sort. He said he'd stay in the hostel the whole 3 days we were there. I can't say I blame him, but shit, my logic was that if I was going to Egypt, I was going to see the damn pyramids one way or another. It was eventually decided that when we changed our flight date, we were also going to remove the 3 day layover there. Our parents had been the cherry on top that had successfully talked us, or begged us more accurately, into it. Aaron and I brought our computers up to the restaurant and asked them if it would be okay to use their Wi-Fi for a while if we bought something. After their consent, we grabbed a couple of gelatos and had a seat. I pulled up a chat window with a representative from the travel company. After a lengthy, furious debate, a final verdict was reached. It was not going to happen. They wanted to charge an exorbitant amount of money per person to change the tickets. We were stuck. Worse, we were stuck with nowhere to stay for the next month. The only thing they did do was remove our layover in Cairo. And they wouldn't even do that until a few days later when Corey's mom, who would have no part of it, called to put the fear of God, or worse, an angry mother, into them. "If my son gets killed in Egypt, his blood is on your hands, Mr. Call Center Representative," or something to that effect, I think. We sat at the restaurant for a few hours, researching different options. I applied online to writing jobs while Aaron researched farms we could possibly work at. Neither of us was making any real headway. All the farms we were looking at had already hired help for the year. Those were jobs you needed to apply for well ahead of time. The best idea we could come up with was to at least try and break even financially for the next month. If we could find a place to camp somewhere, Corey and I could play music for money and Aaron could get a temporary job at a restaurant or something. We'd camp for 5 or 6 days and then spend 1 or 2 in a hostel where we could get Wi-Fi and showers. We looked up a hostel in Rome where we could research a place to camp somewhere nearby. Morale was noticeably low that evening. Our dreams of finally being able to enjoy the luxuries of Southeast Asia were crushed. Back to the bridge we went, more than a little dejected. That night, the Boers returned just as we were drifting off to sleep. Dee engaged them in a full-on fight this time. That crazy bird was chasing the pigs all over the creek for a good 20 minutes or so before they finally gave up and retreated. To this day, I swear that damn emu thought it was protecting us. It came over to our side of the bridge all the time during the day and just stood there next to us, as if it was guarding us. It was very strange. The next morning, we woke up to find Aaron hunched over in his sleeping bag. He looked pale as a ghost. "You all right, man?" Corey asked.
"I think I have that same thing you guys had," he grumbled.
I wanted to jump up and down laughing at him. I wanted to poke him in the ribs and dance in a circle around him while I cackled with joy. After the way he had treated both Corey and I when we were sick, I wanted him to shit his vital organs out. I wanted him to retch so hard he'd puke his testicles out of his mouth. But I kept these evil thoughts to myself. Instead, I said, "Do you want us to get you some fruit or something?"
"Yeah, that'd be nice," he moaned.
"No problem." I knew exactly how he was feeling. Even though he'd been a dick to Corey and I, we both knew what he was going through. And we both knew just how much it sucked. Wouldn't you know it, though, this meant we were stuck under this goddamn bridge for yet another night. That would be 4 nights and 5 days calling that damn place home. Corey and I were walking into town when I mentioned, "Oh, please let that motherfucker ask if we can get a hotel. I will rip him to shreds." I was thinking the same thing. You can lay there on the rocks and suffer just like we did. He knows better than to ask that, I'd think. We got him fruit juice as well as an apple and some fresh water and tea. By early afternoon, he was starting to feel better. He didn't have it as bad as Corey and certainly nowhere near as bad as me. I could tell that pretty easily. Eventually, he said he was ready to travel. I'll give him one thing. The guy was resilient. We finally left the bridge behind and hopped more trains south, passing Cinque Terre and Pisa along the coast, getting ever closer to Rome. We stopped a couple times in search of a new camera for Corey, since he still hadn't replaced his after smashing it at JFK Airport before we left. During one of those stops, the executive decision was made for us all to try and quit smoking again. We all agreed, in the interest of our finances, our favorite topic of conversation and debate, that it was truly imperative that we stick to it this time. None of us were happy about it, though. We only had a little bit of tobacco left, so we divvied it up among us. It amounted to 3 or 4 small cigarettes apiece. It was up to each individual to save or smoke it how we pleased. But then, that was it. We weren't buying any more tobacco. That was the rule. We were within an hour or two of arrival in Rome, and we decided we should find somewhere to camp for the night. We knew from experience that we weren't going to be able to find a place to sleep anywhere in the city, not for free anyway. We'd have better luck hopping off the train in a rural area, camping somewhere, and then coming back to go into the city in the morning. So we got off at a random stop, which, as far as we knew, was in the middle of nowhere. At least that's what it looked like from the train window. However, when we stepped out and investigated, we realized we'd made a serious error. This place was heavily populated. We couldn't find a single spot to bed down away from active streets or residences. We sat on a little concrete barrier next to the train tracks and pondered our options. It was around 1 a.m., so we knew no more trains would be stopping there until morning. Aaron suggested we sleep in the only area of refuge in sight, a big culvert next to the train tracks that everyone had thrown their trash into. It was well hidden by brush and situated down a steep incline that ran parallel to the parking lot we were sitting in. There really wasn't any other choice. We formed a chain down the steep incline and handed packs to the bottom. Once I made it down with the other two, I surveyed our situation. The spot was tragically awful. No doubt our worst yet. There was trash littered everywhere. Bottles, old fast food wrappers and bags, buckets, cans, and even a jug of kerosene that had apparently spilled all over the ground right where I ended up being forced to lay. There was barely enough room in the culvert for the three of us. There were nettles, or itchy weeds, growing everywhere. You couldn't move without being scratched in the face or arms by some bothersome and irritating plant species. I was at an all-time low. I laid my sleeping bag on the ground and attempted to situate my pillow so my head would be as far as possible from the spilled kerosene. I was angled downhill, but I couldn't switch the other way because the majority of the fuel spill was located at that end. Instead, I angled my bag partway up the incline and lay in an awkward L shape. The smell of kerosene invaded my nostrils. I wanted a cigarette desperately bad, although in retrospect it's probably a good thing that I didn't smoke one given the whole kerosene thing. I felt listless and apathetic. I wanted to break down and weep at our situation. The train tracks were less than 20 feet away, and every 10 or 20 minutes a cargo train would come careening down the tracks and shake the earth around us. It was unbearably loud and would end up waking me throughout the night each and every time one went past. It seemed like I was always hungry. It had been 8 days since our last shower, since our last bed for that matter. I was disgusting. I just wanted to go home. What was the point of being here if I had to live like this? I didn't meet anyone or see anything new living under bridges and culverts. I didn't mind this type of living as long as I was experiencing something exciting. There had been nothing enjoyable about the past few days. That night I wrote in my journal, "My spirit is broken. Just when I think things can't get worse, the powers that be find some clever new torture. We are sleeping in a culvert. Nettles and weeds and trash everywhere. When will this bad luck end? I'm depressed and having great difficulty finding optimism, which is very unlike me. I'm exhausted and despondent. I don't want to do this anymore. I hate this. End of chapter 15. Chapter 16. Roma, finalmente. Rome, Italy. I've found there ain't no surer way of finding out whether you like people or hate them than to travel with them. Mark Twain. August 3rd. We spent our first couple days in Rome at the Hostel Happy Days Roma in downtown near Vatican City. The mood improved drastically upon arrival there. We had showers, made awesome new friends in our co-ed dorm, enjoyed a free pasta dinner cooked by the friendly staff each night, and Corey and I even made a good bit of money busking in the evenings. Every morning we were given free coffee and a pastry. It was paradise compared to our previous living conditions and didn't cost that much by European standards. About $9 US per person each night. We became friends with the hostel manager, Alex, who was a small-statured guy from somewhere in the Middle East, we guessed. We had already booked another hostel farther out of town, but when we left Hostel Happy Days, we told him we'd be back at some point when we took our next break from vagabonding. The idea was that if we stayed at this next place, Tiber Campground Hostel, we could disappear and find somewhere nearby to camp for free. It turned out to be a bust after we realized that we weren't going to be able to busk without first paying for a private bus line to take us back into the city. But we did stay there for a couple nights. It should be noted that we arrived in Rome during a record heat wave. Temperatures were reaching well above 100 degrees Fahrenheit each day, and there was no air conditioning anywhere that we could find so far. Especially not in the little summer camp-style dorms we were placed at in this hostel. The upside was that we had almost the whole dorm to ourselves, save one other person, a German guy named Hans who shared one of the rooms. The dorms were separated by sexes, so there were several male dorms and several female ones. Each dorm was huge and separated by little, quote, rooms, which were more like areas, as the walls only came up about 5 or 6 feet, leaving the area above open, assumedly to help with airflow. Each little section had two bunk beds, one on each side. Did I mention that it was hot? Like, hotter than it's ever been in all of recorded history of Rome kind of hot? I'm not kidding, it seriously set a new record for Italy that summer. I went to the showers about 3 or 4 times a day, as cold as the water would get, and then walked back to the dorms without even toweling myself off. I would be relieved for about 10 minutes before my body was completely dry again and sticking to anything it touched. I'd sit on one of the bunk beds, leaning against the wall and typing out articles for the website, and then I'd get up and there would be a huge sweat spot on the wall. It'd be running all the way down from where my shoulders had been to the floor. It was absolutely brutal and there was just no escaping it. The first night there we met this girl named Castle, a short, blonde girl from Canada who was living in northern Italy and working as an au pair for a wealthy family. She had it made. All she had to do was teach them English, and the kids were both older, in their teens, so she basically just talked to them in English while she lived there. Oh, and there was actually a fucking castle. So she lived in this castle, fitting for her name, riding horses and hanging out all day, chatting with spoiled rich kids, and they paid her to do it. She was on a little vacation from the au pair job, which had brought her to Rome, and subsequently to our little campground hostel here near the Tiber. We hit it off with her as well as Hans. He and Aaron had some intense games of chess. Corey and Aaron were notably improving at the game after learning how to play under the bridge, but this guy was really good at it. I spent most of the evening chatting with Castle about music and such, and eventually Corey and I got out our instruments and started to play. Another group of people came over and joined our table. Some British guy I vaguely remember who kept buying us beers and a couple of other guys and girls, one of them an older American. Aaron stood up around 10 p.m. and announced to everyone that he was heading to bed since we were planning on leaving the hostel early the next morning.
"There's still beers, man. Stay and drink," the British kid insisted.
"Nah, man, I think I'm gonna hit the hay. I'll see you guys tomorrow."
"All right, then. Later, man."
We kept drinking. This was the first time we'd really been able to enjoy drinks and conversation since Heidelberg, so we reveled in it. Everyone else went to bed around 1 or 2 a.m., while Corey, Castle, and I remained drinking at our little table outside. The American guy had bought a bunch of beer and abandoned it on the table. There wasn't any sense in letting it go to waste, of course. We had been talking about religion earlier, and Castle had made quite a few comments about Catholicism, which I'd found to be funny, but I'd see Aaron stare ahead quietly in the background, so I thought I'd bring it up for his sake. Hey, I didn't want to, like, call him out earlier or anything, but you should know that Aaron is pretty religious, I told her. I mean, I'm just letting you know, I guess.
Oh, well, I would say there is a 100% chance I offended him then.
Yeah, I just thought I'd let you know for future reference. Around 3 a.m. or so, we finally decided to go to bed.
"Ugh, I hate those sorority bitches in the female dorm," Castle commented as we were gathering up the hordes of empty beer bottles. "Do you guys care if I stay in your dorm instead? I have to wake up at like 8 in the morning to go to the city with Hans anyway. It'd just be easier."
"I don't give a shit," I said. "It's not like there's anyone in there watching over the place." There was a noticeable lack of employee involvement or interest in anything at the campground.
"All right, I'll go grab my stuff and meet you back here."
"Cool." She walked towards the female dorms. When she rounded the corner, I turned to Corey.
"All right, you gotta go to bed, bro. I think I'm gonna try to make a move here."
"Read you loud and clear, man," Corey answered with no qualms. "I'm outie." He finished his beer.
"Good luck."
Such a good friend. Castle came back with her things, and we went into the dorm. At some point between the table outside and the door to the dorm, the idea was settled to build a really fucking badass blanket fort in one of the bunk rooms. We went into one of the many empty bunk sections and hung sheets across the bunk beds, creating a big tent, which we then drunkenly crawled inside. We were being drunk and loud during the entire exchange, and as we crawled inside of it, we heard Aaron from a couple sections over.
"Ugh!"
He sighed loudly and then got up and stormed outside.
"Whoops, I guess we pissed off Jesus," Castle joked.
I tried not to laugh, but I was not successful.
"Okay, seriously, we should try to be quiet," I said.
We stayed up for a good while longer, blunderingly attempting to talk softly. Aaron had returned shortly after. Eventually, sometime around 6 a.m., we fell asleep. I didn't make a move with her because, well, I can't really tell you why. I'm usually a fairly confident guy, but there's just something about being a homeless person for a couple weeks that really knocks you down a peg or two. Anyway, I digress. I was awoken early the next morning by a loud voice and sudden daylight. Aaron tore down the cotton ramparts of my sheet fort as he yelled at me angrily,
"Get the fuck up! We can't just sleep all fucking day!"
He walked back to his section to pack up his stuff. I looked over and saw that Castle had already left with Hans sometime earlier in the morning. My whole body ached. It was approximately the temperature of a demon's taint in the dorm. My head felt like it was filled with a bunch of hammers.
"Aaron," I gasped as I desperately reached for a nearby bottle of water.
"What time is it?"
"Time to get up," he shouted back. "It's 10 a.m. Get your ass up!"
He sounded like a drill sergeant. I sat up in my bed and rested my forehead in my hand. My head was swimming. I dizzily stood up and drunk shuffled to the section where Aaron was packing his stuff. I leaned against the wall and grumbled,
"Dude, what the hell is your problem?"
"My problem? My problem? You and that girl kept me up all fucking night. That's my problem."
"Aaron, I'm sorry about that. I really am. But you're being an asshole right now."
"I'm an asshole? You don't care about anyone but yourself. You sat in there, you know what?
Fuck all this noise. I cut him off. I'm going back to bed. Do whatever you want. I was too hungover to argue with him. Oh no! He followed me back to my bed as I plopped down on top of the sheets. We need to leave. You aren't going back to sleep. You shouldn't have stayed up so late drinking. You can do whatever the fuck you want, man. I know for a fact that no one is going to come here and check this place. I guarantee we could stay here again tonight without paying and nobody will say a goddamn word. I'm staying. I just wanted the argument to be over with so I could go back to sleep. Well, we need to talk. Okay, honey, what do you want to talk about? You're so selfish. You kept me up all fucking night, he repeated. And what's with that girl calling me Jesus? I heard Corey burst into laughter from three sections over. It was the first noise he'd made during the entire altercation. Oh, you think that's funny, Corey? There was a silence. Yes. Aaron, I said with my eyes closed as my hand rested on my forehead. How in the fuck is it my fault she said that? Well, you laughed. It was funny. I'm sorry. Kind of. How did she even know I'm religious, though? I told her in the hopes that she wouldn't make so many religious jokes around you that would make you feel uncomfortable. Believe it or not, I was actually trying to help. Listen, man, can you stop fucking yelling at me? I feel like shit. I'll talk to you about all this, but give it a rest already. He finally spoke at a normal volume, still angrily. Something's gonna have to change. This isn't some big party. I'd like to get some rest at some point. Are you kidding me, Aaron? Some big party? We've been living under bridges and shit. This is the first time we've drank in weeks. We are in no way partying all the time. Well, you guys were staying up late with those Australian girls at the last hostel, too. Referring to hostel happy days. Listen, man. If you want to spend 90% of this trip in some ditch or field in the middle of nowhere, then you're going to have to get used to me having a good time when we're actually around people. There's no way I'm going to apologize to you for having a good time. Corey finally walked over to my bunk room. Aaron, I'm going to have a good time when I can, dude. We don't get to do this very much, so you can bet your ass we're going to take advantage of it when we have the opportunity. Well, I didn't get any sleep because you guys were making all kinds of noise last night. Aaron, I told you I'm sorry and I really mean that. I knew we woke you up the first time and then we tried to be quiet. We really did, I said sincerely. He scoffed. Yeah, I'm sure you did. I'm just saying, if something doesn't change, I don't know what's going to happen. What, Aaron, like you're going to go off by yourself? Maybe I will. Go for it, bro. See if I care. Just leave my backpacking stove next to the bed here and I'll go back to sleep. He nodded his head sarcastically. Yeah, you wouldn't make it anywhere without my money. That's the only reason you even traveled with me. Aaron, I don't give a shit about your money, I answered. I've never once been worried about it. I've told you, shit like this always works out. I'll make money once I have Wi-Fi for a reliable amount of time, or I'll bust for it. The difference is, you don't have any way to make more money, and you're such a goddamn Amish person that you don't even own a debit card to have anyone send you money. Yeah, well, we'll see if you make any money. Whatever, man. Are you leaving or not? Because I'm going back to sleep. I just wish we all would have brought the same amount of money. That's all I'm saying. Aaron, there's nothing we can do about it now. Yes, you did bring more money at the beginning, but I guarantee I'll end up bringing more to the table in the long run. You know what the difference is, though? I don't really care. At all. You'll never hear me say a word about it if I do. Yeah, well, I bet it'd be different if it was switched around and you'd brought more money. No, it wouldn't. I've gone on two different trips now where I've paid for other people to go. And I never even brought it up once. That's just the difference between you and me, I guess. You're so obsessed with money that you'd rather have pieces of paper sitting at home in a box than enjoy yourself on a once-in-a-lifetime trip. We're fundamentally just different people. Look, I'm sorry about last night, but I'm not doing this anymore, man.
Either you're with us or you're not. I'm done arguing with you. He was silent for a moment and then sighed.
I mean, I guess I'll stay, but that doesn't mean this is over.
I think you need to go take a nap. You're obviously pretty upset.
So we're staying here again tonight?
That's what I'm doing. There's no way I'm carrying my pack in this hot-ass weather today. You can do whatever you want.
He stayed and took a nap, thank God.
Later that day, we did some research and found what looked like a suitable place for camping near the Mediterranean, about 30 or so miles west of Rome. It was a nature preserve that was close enough we figured we could take a bus into the nearby town of Ostia to the north or Litorania to the south to busk. We also figured that it would be a suitable place for Aaron to find a temporary job washing dishes or something. The mood remained tense throughout the rest of the day and not helped in the slightest by a noticeable lack of nicotine. We had smoked a couple cigarettes given to us by people who were staying at the hostel, but we still hadn't bought any more tobacco. I craved them constantly. I didn't want to quit anymore at this point, but I was going along with the other two guys. We had started picking up butts off the ground as Aaron had done in Germany and rolling them up to smoke. Yes, it was gross. We didn't care. You're talking to the guys who ate potatoes we found under a bridge. We woke up relatively early the next morning and took the private bus line back into the city. From there, we hopped on a train west, which took us to Litorania, a town situated right on the coast. We exited the train station, picked up a few half-smoked cigarettes from the pavement outside the terminal, and hopped on one of the buses. There were multiple bus lines that stopped by the train station. Figuring out which one we needed to take was a chore, given that the place we'd spotted on the map wasn't going to be listed on the scheduled stops. It was just a nature preserve on the opposite side of the road from the sea, which looked to be full of trees in the satellite images. We knew that it was towards Litorania itself, so we hopped on a bus headed that way and hoped for the best. We noticed something about the Italian bus system, or all the bus systems in Europe for that matter. If there were two or more sets of doors, you could easily hop on without paying. You were supposed to scan some little card thing or give cash to the driver when you got on the bus, but we just never did. We'd hop on whenever we pleased and hop off whenever we pleased. No one ever said a word to us. Unfortunately, the Roman metro system was a little more organized and was comprised of a ticket and gate system. You buy a ticket from the kiosk and then you put it into a little slot among a row of motion-activated gates. Basically, the gates won't open until you put the ticket in the slot. Of course, it didn't take us long to learn from the locals and adopt a way to circumvent this as well. We saw a group of Italian boys insert one ticket into the slot and then follow closely behind one another so the motion sensor would remain tripped and the doors couldn't shut. The little computer in the gate probably thought, "Wow, that was the fattest guy ever." It was kind of sketchy sometimes. There was usually a little police shack among the gates, but we never got caught and had only a couple of close calls. One time I just went to the exiting side, which was comprised of those little spinny bar things, you know, the ones they have at amusement parks and the like with the three little bars that spin and make a clink sound as you walk through. Well, I just hopped right over those fuckers and kept moving. I looked back to see Aaron and Corey approached by an officer who was telling them that this is the exit gate, the entrance gate is over there, blah, blah, blah. I just kept on walking towards the platform and somehow got away with it. Of course, afterwards, I called them both pussies. "But there was a cop, like, right there," one of them had said. A real man would have punched that cop right in the face and asserted his dominance. Anyway, we took one of the buses from the little train station we'd arrived at, which drove along the coastal beaches with recklessness and abandon for the lives of the passengers. The driver sped around turns and screeched to a halt at stops, and you would see here and there a stinking Italian man fresh off the beach go flying into another stinky Italian man. The three stinky American men held onto the bars situated here and there for dear life.
Eventually we saw a little campground, so we thought, hey, this is as good a spot as any, and hopped off when the bus slid to a stop. We entered the aforementioned campground where we were quoted a price of 30 euros per night. We proceeded to laugh directly in their faces.